Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, please give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at RotoJake. Today we're going to be making our picks for the biggest fights at UFC 262, Oliveira versus Chandler. Couple of quick housekeeping items. Our sports betting section on RotoWire gets better every day. We can show you all the odds. I think we rival any other site out there, including some of the odds we'll talk about today, such as first round finish props and win by knockout, win by submission props. So all that knowledge applies to DFS. So we've got you covered there. And of course, Fight IQ is going to be coming at you this Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Sean, Chris, and special guest AJ, you may have read them on the site before. Those guys are going to be breaking down UFC 262 on Friday night on the YouTube channel. But for now, you've got John and I. We're going to take a quick look at the main card, some of the bigger fights, you know, maybe dive into a couple of the undercards that might be DFS applicable. But we'll try to get you going here. John, a lot's been happening since the last time we got together to talk about a fight card. I mean, Usman Rose, that was an amazing call by you. Valentina Shevchenko, that worked out pretty good. Some news with this card. Of course, we lost Diaz and Edwards. That's getting pushed back. And then, of course, we had a card last weekend, kind of a makeshift main event situation where, you know, Rodriguez got the win over the Karate Hottie. And then, of course, Cowboy, who, you know, looking like it may be the end of the road pretty soon for him with that late notice replacement. So any takeaways from that card or the other recent string of fights we've got to see?
I mean, the Cowboy thing is tough. We see this a lot, and it's strange because Dana White is usually pretty good if they see somebody who is clearly – now, there have been exceptions in the past. I mean, he was going to run Diego Sanchez out here against Cerrone, and we all know how that's been going. But if there's somebody who is clearly past their prime and inferior and not like Don Cerrone's in the title picture anymore, he's usually fairly good – about ushering them out with some swiftness. And it's just really hard to watch Cowboy because Alex Morono, and I'm not taking anything away from him, he's a good fighter. He's a very good stand-up fighter. And he was really good the other day. But you're watching that fight, and you just can't help but think how prime Cowboy, and not even prime. Prime Cowboy is probably 7-8 years ago. You know, I'm talking even 2 years ago maybe. probably would have just ate Morona up. He would have pushed forward, legs, kicks. Mm-hmm. Morona wouldn't have been able to land like he was. You know, the pressure wouldn't have been there. And it's just hard. I mean, and Cowboy says he doesn't feel like he's done. You know, he thinks he has a lot left to give. But then he was smart enough to acknowledge that obviously the results don't say that, which they don't. I mean, his performances in the Octagon don't reflect that. His performances look like he's done. So I don't know. Maybe it's just an instance where, you know, he's so popular. Maybe next time out they'll market like one of those retirement fights, you know, put retirement in quotes because next time, you know, Bellator.
You could argue that, you know, the Diego Sanchez matchup, you know, you have two guys that are kind of nearing the end of the road here fighting a weight class up from what they're used to. You know, you could argue that that would have been a good retirement fight, but of course you have the whole Sanchez saga, which is another conversation entirely. That's definitely dominated some headlines this week. But
it's just it's a bad situation all the way around, and we're at the point where you kind of got to take this on a case by case basis. Some guys seem to know and will walk. You know, some guys like Sanchez is probably even a more prime example than Cowboy. They just won't. And, you know, I don't want to use the phrase die in the Octagon, you know, but, you know, they're willing to go out on their sword. And it's a bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all around. I mean, and then you see guys getting, you know, comebacks that have been away so long. It just happens so much in the sport. And I can understand giving Cowboy so much leeway because it's always, you know, you're looking to get hurt. I know a guy. He was always coming in. Week's notice, day's notice, any day, anytime, anyone. He was there, you know, to save cards or save fights. And, you know, obviously, Dana respects the heck out of that. And, it's just a tough situation to deal with. We'll see if they can kind of finesse their way out of this moving forward, give them a manageable opponent for the end. But, hey, we got some fights at UFC 262 we got to talk about. Guys in their prime, fighting for belts, some crazy stuff here, John. Might as well kick it off with the main event, Charles Oliveira, Michael Chandler. Oliveira, 8,700. Chandler comeback, 7,500 on DraftKings. The Vegas odds here, whole lot tighter than those DraftKings salaries indicate. And that's because really that's kind of the theme of this whole card here that we've got is there are a ton of close fights. I put up our staff picks article early this week and there were zero unanimous selections out of the five fights we pick. And that's pretty rare. Usually there's one or two that, you know, we can all agree on. We can all get on board, but this is not that kind of card here. And the money lines, you know, depending on your book, you're going to see Oliveira anywhere between minus 130 and minus 140, kind of coming in and on that top end with the comeback on Chandler, about plus 110. Vegas does like this fight to finish, minus 310 odds to finish here. So that's a good news for DFS players. Also, given this will be the only five-round fight on the card here, it's a shame we can't have the co-main event be five rounds as well. But let's focus on the main event, John. Who you got and how's it playing out?
So, like you mentioned, I'll just say this quick before we get going. Every fight on this card is close, essentially. I think I looked before. I believe the greatest odds you'll find is about minus 240-ish, somewhere around there.
And that's Gina Mazzani, right?
That's Christos Giagos against the late ad on Soriano.
Yeah,
the late
replacement. Yeah.
Prior to that, yes, Gina Mazzani was the biggest favorite on this card.
Yeah, minus 210.
Somewhere around there, minus 210, minus 215. And if you told me we're in a world where Gina Mazzani is the biggest favorite on a UFC card, I wouldn't have believed you. But so essentially what that means is if DraftKings is going to hold the contest, which they always do, the salaries have to be, you know, obviously different or nobody would be able to construct a lineup. Yeah. So what you're going to get on this card is you're going to get a bunch of Vegas odds that are close, and thus you're going to get a bunch of DraftKings salaries that are not close. This is the first example. We're going to talk about a few of them. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Oliveira is $1,200 more than Chandler. This is a very good fight. I think it's important to kind of reset the expectations for the lightweight division. Herbie Nurmagomedov is retired. I don't think anybody I know, nobody in this division is Habib. You know, no one should be put on that pedestal. No one's going to hold the belt through however many title defenses Habib had. But you got two guys who are really good. Charles Oliveira has been in the UFC for almost 11 years, which is crazy because he's not going to be 32 till October. He's been in there with, just to name a few, Frankie Edgar, Jeremy Stevens, Cub Swanson, Cowboy, back when Cowboy was Cowboy, Max Holloway, Anthony Pettis, Ricardo Lamas, Paul Felder, Kevin Lee, Tony Ferguson. It goes on and on. Oliveira's won 8 fights in a row. 7 of those 8 have come via stoppage. Oliveira is one of, if not the best submission specialists in the sport today. But this run he's gone on has directly coincided with his improvement in his striking game. He was a poor striker early in his career, which is understandable because he's so good on the mat that he never would be able to come close to touching his mat skills. You know, there's going to be a gap between the two. It's kind of similar to what Henry Cejudo went through earlier in his career, where Cejudo's wrestling was so good that we always said if he could just get his striking to even average, he'd be such a threat in two areas that he'd have a chance to be a champion. He obviously ended up being a champion in multiple divisions. Oliveira has now established himself as, with Khabib gone, he's arguably the best lightweight in the world at this point. I've always been a big Oliveira believer. With his improved striking, this run he's been on lately appears to be entirely sustainable to me because he's one of, if not the best match specialists in the sport, and then you add in the striking. He's taking on an opponent in Michael Chandler who his UFC run, I just mentioned all the guys that Oliveira's fought in the UFC. Michael Chandler's been in the UFC for 2.5 minutes on the nose. Made his debut in January, fought Dan Hooker in a fight. I picked Hooker. I was dead wrong. Chandler walked in and torched him. The main concern about Chandler upon his arrival in the company was he developed a reputation in Bellator as an elite fighter, but he never really fought anyone good on a consistent basis. People thought he was beating up lesser competition. Then he went in and fought Hooker and absolutely crushed him. And we've seen Dan Hooker take some beatings, as in like Dan Hooker's one of the toughest men on the planet, mm-hmm. and Chandler absolutely crushed him. And that's funny because Michael Chandler, while he's known for his power, is more known as like a wrestling and pace guy, but he blew by Hooker like it was nothing. I was extremely impressed by that. So that takes us to who do I think is going to win this fight. I've come this far on Oliveira that I'm going to ride with him till the end. He's my pick. I think it'd be a good idea for Chandler to try and wrestle. Oliveira's takedown defense is 57%, which is pretty lousy. But then Chandler's going to run into the problem of you don't ever want to go with a roll around with Oliveira on the mat. It's a bad idea. It's an especially worse idea given the fact Chandler's given up 2 inches in height and 3 inches in reach. So I'm going to go with Oliveira, but then this brings us back to the point we mentioned before we started here. Oliveira looks overpriced from a DraftKings perspective because there's no way, at least as far as talent level between the two, that there's a $1,200 gap. Mm-hmm. And Chandler is the much more desirable DraftKings play because you're never going to find a guy like that who you think has such a reasonable chance to win, which I do. I certainly wouldn't be shocked if he won, for $7,500. And this is one of those fights where I certainly advise getting a piece of both men. And it's not that the DraftKings salaries are reflective of, you know, they have to do this in order to have a contest. And if every single fight on the card is close or fairly close in terms of Vegas odds, this is what they're going to have to do in order to have a contest. Mm-hmm. So this is a close one. I probably advise getting a piece of both men. If I had to put an odds value as far as who I thought was going to win, I'd probably have it, I don't know, 55-45 Oliveira, which essentially is pretty much what you're looking at in the odds, minus 130 plus 110. That's about right.
Yeah, I hear you. And you made some great points there. I 100% agree that this is a fight that you need to get both sides of MMA, as you all know if you're listening here. It's a mass multi-entry sport, so you definitely want some of each. I think I'm going to be a little heavier on Oliveira here for a couple of reasons. One, there just aren't that many pay-up options, so normally you know, if you see a guy at minus 130, minus 140 for 8,700, you think, man, that's really risky. But because of the status of the car, there just aren't that many pay-up options. Normally, he'd probably be around 8,400, 8,300, and it'd be a lot easier to stomach. Not this time around here, but you can fit him in your lineups because, you know, are you going to use Gina Mazzani as your pay-up option? Probably not. You'd rather take the five-round fighter here and, you know, win by knockout. Michael Chandler actually has the second-best prop on the entire card. Win by submission. No surprises there. Oliveira has the best prop on the entire card. And, you know, I'm pulling all these numbers from the RotoWire sports betting page. Completely free to check it out. You can click on any column to sort it here. Round one finish. Oliveira has the best odds on the entire card. By a hair, we'll talk about this guy at the end. But Chandler has top five odds too here. So for that reason, a stack's not really in play. But I'm gonna get Oliveira, and I'm going to have more Oliveira than Chandler. But like you said, both sides. The biggest reason I'm saying that I'm heavy on Oliveira, and he was the closest we actually had to a unanimous selection in the staff picks, is that Chandler's biggest strength is his wrestling. You know, like you mentioned, wrestling, pace, control fights. You know, if his hands aren't necessarily doing it, he's going to try to wrestle you, get on top of you, control the rounds, gain mat control. That's very helpful for the DraftKings scoring. I like that, but the problem is you don't want to go to the ground voluntarily against Oliveira. If Chandler shoots, I have to imagine Oliveira will invite him into his guard, where he'll start throwing up triangles and doing all those kinds of jiu-jitsu things that he's got success from in the past here. And Chandler, you know, I saw some of DC's comments. Chandler's got those hips and that wrestling base that's going to make it hard for Oliveira to do his thing. I don't know if I'm buying that. I think that's just a wrestling guy defending another wrestling guy here. I do not think it would be wise to go to the ground with Oliveira. And if that's what Chandler wants to do, I'm not sure it's going to end well for him. So for that reason, could Chandler clock him one? Yeah, I would say his stand-up's maybe a little bit better despite the improvements that Oliveira made. Could Chandler get the knockout if he keeps it on his feet? You know, maybe he decides to stay on the feet and uses wrestling more defensively to help defend any kind of attempts from Oliveira to get this to the ground. But Oliveira, you know, he can kind of hang with him there. I think that would be wise, but will Chandler do that? I don't really know what his game plan's going to be. So for that reason, you take one fighter's biggest strength, and it doesn't match up with the other fighter's biggest strength. So for me, it's an Oliveira pick. Didn't have to think too hard about this. Would I be shocked if he lost, though? Not necessarily.
No, yeah, no, it's close for me. I'm in a similar mindset. And I think there's still going to be people who, as good as Michael Chandler looked against Dan Hooker, I think there's still going to be people who say it's one fight. You know, he came to the UFC. I want to see more against top flight competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, fair enough here. And the winner here presumably would defend against, well, the McGregor-Poirier winner. That fight's booked for July. So UFC's kind of got their steps planned out here. We'll see. That'll be a banger as well. So a lot going on in the lightweight division here. We can move on to the co-main event, though. Tony Ferguson, Beneil Dariush. Dariush very deserving of this opportunity, and he is the betting favorite of minus 165. Combat on Ferguson is plus 145. Never really thought I'd see that even in 2021, but here we are. Dariush is 8,600 on DraftKings. Ferguson is 7,600, which, you know, again, you look at the odds and the salaries side by side here. Dariush is a favorite, you know, 20, 25 points more than Oliveira, but his salary is $100 cheaper. So, you know, you're going to have some interesting math going when you're putting together these lineups here. Odds to finish, plus 130. Vegas does like this to go to a decision, but they could easily see, you know, something stepping there and changing that potential outcome here. I guess looking at this fight, John, you know, what are the key factors for both guys, and what would Dariush have to do to cash in as the favorite?
You know, it's crazy, but if you would have told me, 12 months ago, that Beneil Dariush should be a minus 165 favorite against Tony Ferguson, I never would have believed you. But it's fallen apart on Tony really, really quick. Back-to-back losses to Justin Gaethje and Oliveira, who we just spoke about. And not just losses, but lopsided losses. I mean, Tony looked bad in both of those fights. Really bad. And those two setbacks were coming on a string of on the heels of a dozen wins in a row. I mean, this is a guy who went from October 2013 to June 2019 without a loss. And then, you know, as we've spoken about on here, we talked about all the times that the scheduled fight with Habib fell apart. What was it, 3, 4, 5 times, whatever it was. They were always due to fight. It never happened. Tony never got the fight against Habib. And now, I mean, he's essentially in like must-win territory. The lightweight division is so deep that if Tony doesn't win on Saturday, it's pretty much curtains, because this is a guy who turned 37 years old this past February. He's not a kid. I've said in here on this in this platform, he's gotten better as he's aged, and he definitely has. But everything that's made Tony successful, his toughness, his creativity, it's been gone the last two fights. Absolutely gone. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what Anthony Pettis went through when he went from, you know, one of the top guys in the company to, you know, kind of a gatekeeper. It just looks like he's hesitant to do anything. He's slow. He's not reacting with any fluidity. He just looks like he's overthinking inside the octagon, and it's a bad, bad combination. And he's going up against the guy in Beneil Dariush, who has been one of the more underrated fighters in the company for years.
Yeah, you've been on this guy a while. I'll give you that.
He's very good, very, very good. 6 straight wins dating back to November 2018. The thing about Dariush is he's not particularly popular with casual fans because his style is kind of sleepy. You know, he's not a high octane fighter. He doesn't push the pedal to the metal, although he has improved his output early in fights. He had a couple fights in his career where the activity level early on was not good, and it ended up costing him. He's gotten a little better with that as far as starting quicker. He's also deceptively strong and has really underrated power. Like, if you leave an opening, he'll clock you, and you'll pay for it.
Mm-hmm. He's got 4 stoppages in his last 5 fights, or, you know, during the 6 fight winning streak here. So he does have, you know, fight stopping power both on the feet and in the submission area.
Yeah, he's a good all around fighter. King's MMA guy. He's really good. So pretty much on the surface, at least, this looks like a fight that prime Tony Ferguson would be able to excel in, because Dariush doesn't have terrific movement. Tony's definitely the better athlete, but I really just, considering what we've seen from Tony his last couple fights, I don't see how you can pick him against anyone good, let alone great, until you see some sort of improvement. When I saw this fight announced, as crazy as it sounds, I immediately went with Dariush. That was my gut reaction, and the more I dug, I didn't see anything that changed my mind. Maybe we'll see the old Tony. If you see the old Tony, he's going to prove me wrong, and I'm going to look like a fool. But I don't think you can go back to him until you see something else. Of course, the salary's cheap, though. If you are a believer that, well, look, he's fighting a guy, a former, you know, interim champion, Gaethje, and, you know, a guy who's going to fight for the undisputed title on this card. If you think it's just a matter of Tony finding his way, you know, you're never going to find Tony Ferguson again for $7,600. So, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, you do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a tough one, because at $7,600, and you look at, you know, Tony Ferguson has more name recognition than the main event or anybody else on this card, arguably. He is the most popular name, especially when we throw the Edwards Nate Diaz fight off of here. So if you're in the game of trying to project ownership and trying to gain leverage, then you probably do look at Dariush for tournaments, because I would almost guarantee that Ferguson's, you know, ownership level is going to be right up above, or at least in the ballpark of Dariush here. But that being said, I don't know. I think I'm going to bite on this trap, and I don't quite think Ferguson's washed up enough. Dariush, you know, I don't want to discredit the guy, because he's a great fighter. I agree with most of what you said there. His 6 fight winning streak, not super impressive here. I don't know if you've seen him through this, but Diego Fajardo, that was a split decision, but also not a good. The card that had it the other way wasn't great. Scott Holtzman, Drakkar Klose, Frank Camacho, Drew Dober, Thiago Moises. That's a 6 fight winning streak, and yeah, I agree that it deserves to get him in that spot. But before then, you know, he hit a rough patch as well. Knocked out in the first round by Alexander Hernandez, fought Evan Dunham to a majority draw, and also got knocked out with a knee in the second round by Edson Barboza. So I wouldn't say Dariush is chinny by any means, but he can be got. And, you know, if we get any shades of the old Ferguson that was there, I think we can get him. And, this troubles me so much because I know everyone's going to be on Ferguson. Every casual player that's putting only a couple bullets in the mini max or however you want to put that is going to want Ferguson because they're seeing a name they know and they see a cheap price. And I don't know if I'm just hanging on to my image of what I thought Ferguson was, but I'm not quite ready to count him out. You know, the loss against Oliveira, he didn't look good, but I'm going to attribute that just as much to Oliveira's improvements as I am to Tony Ferguson's decline. So, and I'm picking Oliveira in the main event here, so that says something. The loss to Gaethje, that was a little bit weird. You know, during the pandemic, he was supposed to fight a month before. He made weight a month before, which was kind of kooky, but, you know, he did it anyway. And then, of course, he loses to Gaethje, who had an excellent game plan here. So I'm writing off his losses maybe a little bit too much, and maybe I'm clinging to the nostalgia of is this the Ferguson, you know, that we're used to having, that I have in my mind. Maybe it's not there, but I'm going to go ahead and pick him in this one.
You know what? I don't think going to be particularly close either way, because if Tony does have something left in the tank, he has the skill set that should really give Darren a bunch of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't, and if the guy we saw against Oliveira and Gaethje is the guy we're going to get moving forward, Dariush is plenty good enough to make him look foolish in a row. So I think you're going to get a fairly, if say this fight does go the distance, I think you're going to get a pretty clear decision one way or the other. It's just which of that you believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I have a hard time. I mean, Dariush, there's a leverage angle for sure. There are only 11 fights right now on this card as of record time. So, you know, I guess you gotta make your picks and take your stance somewhere. Ferguson's really hard to get out of there, even at the age of 37. I know Gaethje did it in the fifth round. This is only a 3-round fight here. I don't see really any way that Ferguson gets put out, in this fight. So with that in mind, you know, I think he can somehow find a way to get it done against the guy in Dariush, who's hot. You know, not quite fighting the elite guys that Ferguson has been fought. You know, strength of record's important to me too. So I take that into account. But yeah, this is one that's very disputed on the staff picks. If you go look at them, people are both ways, you know, and it comes down to what you said, John. You know, what do we have of Ferguson that's left? But, you know, we can hit that point so much, but we can kind of move on here as well. Got a women's flyweight fight to talk about. Caitlin Chookagian versus Viviana Araujo. I think I might have messed that pronunciation up here. I'll let you take it from there. But Chookagian, 8,800 on DraftKings. Vivian, 7,400 coming back. Chookagian, minus 135. Vivian, plus 115 here. This is a tough one here, John. And for me, it comes down to, can Chookagian defend the takedown here? What are the odds she can here?
I don't know. This fight doesn't do anything for me. I think you knew I was going to say that, too. Yeah, this is Caitlin Chookagian is 8-4 in the UFC. She fights often. She fought three times in 2018, twice in 2019. She fought four times in 2020. Mm-hmm. So she has value for a company which holds an event like literally every week. Mm-hmm. You know, there is value there, and I say that all the time.
And there's not exactly depth in this division either here. So, you know, when you talk about depth options, she's kind of the definition.
Yeah, no, there's no depth in division at all, and it's a real problem. Caitlin is a compact boxer with no power. I don't think she has a knockout win in her career, if I'm not mistaken. I know all her UFC wins are via decision. She also doesn't offer anything in terms of secondary skills. If she's not landing a bunch of volume, she's not going to win. She's tall. She's about 5'9". She comes in good shape, and those are really her two greatest assets. It's a little bit of a similar skill set to Jessica Eye, which is actually the one opponent these two have in common. But like you said, this is whether or not Caitlin can stay on her feet, because she defends the takedown at 51%, which is abysmal. And Vivian averages 2.33 takedowns per 15 minutes. So if Caitlin's going to find her way to her back, she's not going to be able to get back to her feet, and she offers nothing from a submission standpoint. She needs this to be a kickboxing match in order for her to win. This is another fight where obviously the salaries and the odds don't match up. Chookagian's $1,400 more in salary, and she's minus 135. You know, if you're talking your average fight at 8,800, the fighter's probably at least minus 200 at a minimum. Minus 200, minus 225, whatever. I don't love this fight from a DraftKings perspective, but that's where we're at with the cancellations, with the Diaz-Edwards and the Edmund and Jack Hermanson fight. I'm going to take Vivian. I've been the low man on Chookagian for a while. I'm kind of sticking with it. But that 51% takedown defense is enough for me to take Vivian as an underdog and hope she just lands takedowns in 2 out of 3 rounds and grinds her way to the finish. I mean, you know Chookagian's not going to knock her out because she's never knocked anybody out. So if that's what you're going, I'm willing to take that slight underdog hit and hope she can just grind out a decision.
Yeah, Chookagian loves getting taken down here. Her takedown defense here is just 51%, which is it's not good. Not a good mark in the UFC for sure.
You want to be north of 70.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to really be considered having good takedown defense at least. And, you know, she was only taken down one time by Calvillo, pretty much dominated in that area by Andrade. You know, really the only fighter that hasn't taken her down of late is Antonina Shevchenko, I guess. I don't know. I think Vivian could, I could see her controlling this fight, going to the ground. Really, this is one that I'm probably avoiding on DraftKings.
I was just gonna say, I don't think there's upside either way, no matter what you do.
Yeah, because a lot of Chookagian's fights often aren't considered significant by the official scorers, and she's not getting you any grappling points, and she's 8,800. I could see her scoring like 65 points tops in a win, and you're not going to get your value at 8,800. So unless you need some salary relief with the opponent here, I fade this one. At the same time, I do think that Chookagian might be on a little bit higher level here, and if she can stay on her feet, she'll outpoint her over the rounds. It won't be pretty. It'll be a 60-65 point decision, but I'm picking Chookagian outright. Now, when I make the DraftKings lineups, yeah, I might have a little more Aruajo, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, this is if you're looking for that. What do you always say? You look for 10x on DraftKings, right?
Or, about 10x.
I don't think
12x for GPPs. Maybe 10x for cash. Yeah,
I don't think you're going to get that here.
Yeah, definitely not going to
either
get that.
Way.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about another fight. This is a fight that I think we're going to want to get some of on DraftKings here. I know the odds to finish are plus 130, but you know, I always add in the odds to finish to the article afterwards that John writes up for the site, and there weren't a lot of real favorable numbers here in this one here, so 130 is actually on the nicer end here. We got Shane Burgos, Hurricane Shane, taking on Edson Barboza. Burgos is a slight favorite, a minus 130, Barboza plus 110. Again, that would normally make for like an 8,200, 8,000, or 8,100 all scenario, but in this case, Burgos is 8,400. Barboza is 7,800. I guess who do you got here, and how does he get it done?
This is good. This is a good one. I'm looking for, you know, I'm not particularly excited about the last one. Looking forward to this one. This is a good one. Edson Barboza is still firmly in must win mode. I know he snapped a 3-fight losing streak with a pretty good unanimous decision win over Makwin Amerikani, who's actually pretty underrated in October. But Barboza's still in must-win mode. Those three losses I mentioned right before the Amerikani fight, were two of them were via split decision, Dan Ige and Paul Felder. The other was a knockout to Justin Gaethje. Barboza's 35 years old now. He's been in fights where he's taken a bunch of punishment. It's kind of the Cowboy Cerrone thing we talked about at the top of the show. Tony Ferguson, too, to some extent. They're getting up. All these guys are getting up there in age, and it's really just fair to wonder if their bodies are just breaking down a little bit. You know, is the physical abuse just starting to go? Edson Barboza, actually, which I didn't know until I did some research for this, signed a new UFC contract recently, and that surprised me a little. So he's not – obviously, the company thinks he still has plenty left to give. Fighting a guy in Shane Burgos who's good, certainly good, 6-2 in the UFC, guy native of the Bronx in New York, part of the Tiger Schulman team. Burgos has really, really quick hands. He's more of a volume guy than a pure power guy. But very good at getting in and out, very good at stringing together combinations. It's a good skill set. I have two main concerns against Burgos. The first one being he's got that mentality where he's willing to eat a strike in order to land two of his own. He lands 7.31 per significant strikes a minute. He absorbs 5.81. Those are both very, very big numbers, especially the absorbed one. Mm-hmm. That strategy generally does not work when you start facing better competition. When you're getting hit once against better, you know, twice against, you know, lesser competition, when you start facing better competition, you're getting hit more like 4, 5, or 6 times. And that leads me to the second part, which is as good as Burgos has been, and he's good, he's never really beaten anyone that good. He beat Amir Khani, who Barboza just defeated. He beat Cub Swanson when Cub was kind of on the tail end of his career. And it kind of stops there. The two best guys he's fought to date, Calvin Kattar and Josh Emmett, he lost both. He was knocked out by Kattar. He dropped a unanimous decision to Emmett, which is his most recent fight. I'm going to go with Barboza. I expect this to be a 15-minute kickboxing match. The as far as physical attributes, these guys are exactly the same. The height's the same. The reach is the same. Everything's the same. The durability edge certainly goes to Burgos. We've seen him eat a bunch of shots time and time again and not be affected by it at all, really. He's one of those guys who just gets punched in the face and just keeps coming forward, gets punched again, keeps moving forward. I think Edson would be well – but Burgos is very boxing-based. I think if Edson – can fire off a ton of those leg kicks we've come used to seeing. Mm-hmm. And Edson's probably the best down. Probably the best kicker in the history of the company. Mm-hmm. Prime Edson Barboza can chop a leg like, I don't know, maybe Jose Aldo's up there too, I would guess you could probably say. Mm-hmm. But prime, those are the two guys who you think of when you think a guy who can hammer you with leg kicks.
Yeah, I'll never forget in December of 2018, before all this pandemic and everything, I watched him KO Dan Hooker with it was a body punch, but it was leg kick after leg kick after leg kick that set them up. And to hear those in person was just cringe inducing. Like, he kicks just as hard, like you said, as anybody in the UFC. It's incredibly impressive.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, I think you're also you're getting a slight salary discount on Barboza, $7,800. So you're saving $600. The other thing I would say, though, is I think Barboza is going to be very high owned. There's certainly a gap in casual fandom between these two. Barboza is much better known, and you're kind of falling a little, not to the same extent and the same level. You're kind of falling into the same trap as Ferguson that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. where Tony's going to be really high owned. I don't think Barboza is going to be on that level, but I think he's going to have a pretty high percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to illustrate that, I'm kind of looking at our staff picks, and it's 4 for Barboza, 2 for Burgos. So again, like you said, a really close fight, and of course Barboza has that name recognition advantage. But for me, I mean, it comes down to strength of record here for me. And yeah, maybe I value that, being a college basketball guy looking at all these metrics. But, you know, I mentioned this on the show before, but one of the things I look at first when, you know, I'm trying to get an idea for underdogs I should maybe zero in on are the, are some of the fight matrix. They use 4 different, advanced metrics, if you call them that, to kind of to gauge the percent chance of win here. And a lot of it is rating each of the fighters' wins and then kind of stacking that against each other. And, you know, while Burgos is the betting favorite with an implied win percentage just around 53%, Barboza takes the cake with every single other one of those. 2 of them are over 60%. 1 of them's over 70%. So again, I'm not saying that this math, you know, you can do all sorts of math with MMA. It's not the end all be all here of finding underdogs, but these guys looking looking at these numbers, when somebody has these kinds of numbers, it absolutely puts them on my radar here to start with. And yeah, you know, some of it, I think it's going to be the body kicks by Barboza. That's going to be a big thing. And also, I think Barboza's just being discounted a little bit. I mean, Dan Ige and Paul Felder, both of those were split decisions. I actually thought, you know, you could make a very good case that Barboza actually beat Ige in that fight.
Yeah, I thought he won that fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I remember thinking that. And then other than that, his losses have been killers. I mean, Gaethje, Khabib, Tony, I mean, all these guys.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As the best the division has to offer, and Barboza's going down a division here, although it doesn't really give him a height or reach advantage here. He's going to have a lot more solid frame than Burgos coming into this, you know. So 35 years old, kind of just sneaking out of his prime for Barboza. You know, he's got the camp at American Top Team that is going to put him with the best game plan and the best, you know, just overall strategy and camp, you know, one of the best camps in the business here. I just, you know, if I'm doing a pros and cons chart and I'm putting tallies on both sides, more of those tallies fall on Barboza for me, so I'm going to have to agree with you, pick him outright, and go with the salary relief he provides.
Yeah, it's a close one. You know, this is one of those where flip a coin, wouldn't be surprised either way.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Result. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole card sometimes feels like that. You know,
there's a lot of it.
We can easily carve out paths to victory for both sides, both fighters in the last four fights we just talked about. I mean, it's going to be a wild card from start to finish. I mean, with close fights, you know, some of them are more exciting than others, but there's going to be a lot to go off of here. They put Matt Schnell against Rogério Bonturin is the other fight in the main card. I actually think that's going to take the place of the Shahbazyan fight and go between the Chookagian fight and the Tony Ferguson fight. That's on there. We could talk about that if you wanted to, but anybody else really looking up and down this card that you think there might be a play where maybe you need to take advantage of, or, you know, people chasing that knockout bonus here? Anybody else in here stand out that when you're making a DraftKings lineup, you know, what do you have to look for, or people you should consider?
Well, I'd pass on the Schnell a Bonturin fight. I mean, this is going to sum it up for you. Both these guys have had a decent amount of fights in the UFC, you know, upwards of, you know, at least at well over a half dozen. So, you know, we've seen these guys. Schnell's averaging 49.4 DraftKings points. Bonturin's averaging 49.1. No thanks. Mm-hmm. That's not going to get the job done. They're both ground-based guys, not a lot of volume on the feet. Not what you're looking for from a DraftKings perspective. You slide down a little further. There are two I like. One's an underdog, one's not. I like Mike Grundy against Lando Venata. Grundy's 8,200, Venata's 8,000, which is roughly in line with the salary, the Vegas odds. Grundy's -115, Venata's -105. My reason for liking Grundy is that Venata's just reckless. Every time we watch him fight, the guy just balls to the wall and just doesn't worry about defending himself. And remember, he almost beat Tony Ferguson in his debut.
It was
late
after
notice.
The big Ferguson layoff, and Venata basically bum rushed him, you know, trying to get a finish. He almost did several times. Mm-hmm. He had clocked him a couple times. So,
but that's how the guy fights, straightforward mm-hmm. all the time. And so the one play on this card I probably like more than any other is just because of how cheap it is. Is Andrea Lee at 7,000. Mm-hmm. Antonina Shevchenko is 9,200. I have no idea why. It makes no sense to me, especially when you look at the Vegas odds. Shevchenko's -125. Lee is +105. that's fairly close to a pick'em. You know, maybe $300-$400 difference in salary. There's $2,200 in salary difference between these two. Neither woman has been any good. I believe Antonina Shevchenko, obviously the older sister of Valentina, has alternated wins and losses in her five UFC fights. She's 3-2. None of them have been, you know, particularly impressive. She's not her sister. There's no doubt about that. She was a little hyped up from the beginning because of who her sister is. And Andrea Lee, another woman who definitely had high hopes because she was good in Invicta, and she's come to the UFC and I don't know what the hell's happened. She's been terrible. She's lost three fights in a row. Two of them were via split decision, though. She lost a split decision to Joanne Calderwood, a split decision to Lauren Murphy, and both JoJo and Murphy have actually fought well of late, Murphy in particular. So, and then she dropped a unanimous decision to Roxanne Modafferi, which I can't really explain.
That doesn't make sense at all.
No, that's not a good one. But Lee's 4 years younger, and even if you think Shevchenko's going to win, there's no way in a million years there's a $2,200 salary difference between the two.
Can't pay up like that for you know, largely a decision. Well, I don't want to say a decision fighter because her last two wins have been stoppages in the second round, TKO and a rear naked choke here. I guess Shevchenko gets the occasional finish. But yeah, I'm not interested in paying that price, even when. Even when you have the money for it here, because some of these favorites and you get cheap dog. There's tons of line values, what I should say.
Oh,
you're getting plus 110 fighters, you know, minus 105 fighters for, you know, $400-$600 less than your average salary per fighter here. So there's opportunities.
Oh God, if you use Lee at 7,000 and on this card, you can almost do whatever you want. You know, especially with, you know, as far apart as some of the salaries are, you know, assuming you're not totally in line with the Vegas odds, if you use a fighter at 7,000, the problem is obviously it would help you construct your lineup. You know, I like her to win. I think it's probably more of a cash game play. The problem is you're probably not going to, you know, Andrea Lee's not the type to generate a ton of DraftKings salaries. It's more of a straight up. You know, I think she's better than Shevchenko relative to the number type thing. I don't think it's someone who's going to get, you know, the odds to finish are plus 260. So,
I want to bring up one more kind of math play that I was surfing around and I saw on here now. Jamie Pickett, he's 0-1 in the UFC. He lost his first two contender series appearances in season 1 and season 3 before getting a second round finish in season 4 of the contender series. But what I like about Jamie Pickett is a couple of things. One, 8 of his 11 wins are by knockout, 9 total just by any kind of stoppage. And I kind of alluded at the beginning of the show, you know, with Chandler having the second highest win by knockout prop. The number one win by knockout prop at plus 195 is Jamie Pickett against Jordan Wright. Now, you'll know in the first 2 minutes here whether this is going to go your way, because I imagine he'll come out swinging and Wright will try to make a more calm and approached, you know, game plan. He's got Jackson Wink in his corner here. You'd think that will help him out. But I don't know. Pickett can throw hands. He can stop people. He's plus 195, which is the best win by knockout prop. I mentioned that already. And then he's got the second best behind Charles Oliveira as far as first round win prop at plus 470. Oliveira's plus 460 here. And that's all we got here. So looking at the numbers, you know, if you're looking to get maybe a fighter or two in and you want guys to fill out your lineup that'll at least give you maybe a shot to win, you know, some of these big prizes, go for that gone in 60 seconds bonus with Jamie Pickett, because the kicker is, guess what? He's $8,100 on DraftKings. You know, it's a pick 'em fight here. My, you know, I'm looking at what the other sites have for some of these metrics here. Nothing too crazy. A lot of them actually like Jordan Wright, the other side, but I don't know. Pickett's a finisher. You know, give me minus 110 with those finishing odds at $8,100. You know, I'll take it.
Yeah, I, for all the years we've been doing this, I can't ever remember writing up a fight where both the DK salaries were identical and both the Vegas odds were identical. Mm-hmm. At least at the time of writing, they are in this fight. Mm-hmm. It's the only time I can remember that happening.
Yeah, so I mean, so then you go ahead and you have to think, okay, so who's going to score fantasy wise? You know, the fantasy scoring ceiling is a lot higher for Pickett than Wright, probably, which is why, you know, I'll have some Pickett and hopefully he can get it done with his hands. But I think if we get outside the first round, that play is going to be in trouble. So maybe not put all your eggs in one basket. And again, we advocate multi-entry here. But if you are just going for one ticket and, you know, want to give your lineup the highest ceiling possible, I think he's a person that suddenly becomes part of that. And then, of course, any other pay-up options you like? You know, we mentioned the guy, the late notice guy on there, hasn't actually even been added to DraftKings yet.
No, so it wasn't when I wrote it this morning.
Yeah, and it's not as of, you know, I'm looking at it right now, the Soriano and Gyagos one. Gyagos is the favorite here. You know, fight doesn't go to decision. Odds to finish there are plus 150. Goes to decision minus 190. Gyagos wins inside the distance plus 300. So that's not even necessarily what I want to see out of, you know, what I assume is a pay-up option. He should be, you know, if they stick to this pattern, Gyagos should be 9,400. And I don't even know if I'm going to want to pay up for that. So him, you know, Mazzani 9,300, Shevchenko 9,200. None of that really excites me a whole lot. So you could leave salary on the table here.
I would absolutely leave Sarri on the table. I can't ever remember. Say they do put Gyagos in at 9,400, hypothetically. I can't remember a card where the two or three or four higher price fighters on the card are as underwhelming from a DraftKings standpoint as this one. Mm-hmm. I can't ever remember wanting to leave salary more on the table than I do on this card.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you're looking at your end lineups, you probably don't want too many people over 8,700, and you know, a lot of if you need to make your lineup unique, and one way to do that is to leave salary on the table. So I think that's what we can conclude with here as one of the overarching themes here, just because of how this is one of the more unique contest structures. I've never seen it where there are so many close fights, which is going to make for some great viewing here. So yeah, any final thoughts on the card here before we start to wrap things up, John?
I don't think it's any secret. It's not as good as it was originally intended to be. You know, that's no secret, but you know, you got three really good fights on the main card, and I'm always interested in seeing Jacare because I know the results haven't been good lately, but I still think there's something there. I'm not crazy about him at 8,500. A little overpriced, but
almost in a Fabricio Verdum type way. He seems like someone where even as he gets into his 40s, he's fully capable of sneaking through a submission, you know, at any time. He
keeps himself in such great shape. Yep. It's just, you know, I have a hard time betting on him, even as old as he is and as much as he's seen. You know, you see guys like Glover Teixeira who, you know, I saw Glover fight John Jones in, you know, 2012 or whatever the heck it was. And, you know, you thought he was done and he looked like he'd be released five times. And, you know, September or October, whatever the heck it is, he's going to fight Jan Blachowicz for the title again. So, you know, I'm a little more hesitant to write off these guys who are totally, you know, appear like they're aging out, unless, you know, it's a case like Cowboy where, you know, it's clear that it's over.
It seems like, yeah, in the slightly heavier divisions, submission specialists always can find a way to just hang around here. So that'll be interesting too. I assume they're keeping that as the ESPN prelim finale here so they can put at least a name on that. You know, they'll do that.
Yeah,
sometimes.
It looked like that was the plan.
All right. Well, thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Again, give John a follow on Twitter at JONLITTERINE. You can follow me at RotoJake. I don't know if we've mentioned this yet, but we're going to be back with you guys prior to UFC 263. That's Israel Adesanya versus Marvin Vettori 2. We'll catch you guys next month.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.